Welcome to Heart of Iowa, a program featuring a patchwork quilt of artists, public speakers, and individuals of note in Central Iowa. I am Cynthia McClure, and today we are featuring music and stories from Elizabeth Rurrett. I hope you enjoy our original programming here on the Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio.
Blessed be and merry meet, gentle listeners. My name is Liz Rarrett, and I facilitate Persephone's children. You can contact me via Facebook at liz.rohrett. Spring is here at last. Thank goodness. Thursday, March 20th is the first official day of spring, and that is when the equinox occurs. Equinox comes from the Greek language, and it means equal night. It is the day when there are 12 hours of day and 12 hours of night the whole world over. There are actually two equinoxes in each year. One is in the spring, and the other is in the fall.
Blessed be you gods and mortals. Blessed be you inner fire. Blessed be you crown of brightness. Blessed be you heart's desire. Blessed be you gods and mortals. Blessed be you inner fire. Blessed be you crown of brightness. Blessed be you heart's desire. Blessed be you gods and mortals. Blessed be you inner fire. Blessed be you crown of brightness. Blessed be you heart's desire. Blessed be you gods and mortals. Blessed be you inner fire. Blessed be you crown of brightness. Blessed be you heart's desire. Blessed be you gods and mortals. Blessed be you inner fire. Blessed be you crown of brightness. Blessed be you heart's desire.
We were waiting for a turning. Then we saw it was our light. When our hearts with flame are burning, like the sun in flight we rise.
Blessed be you gods and mortals. Blessed be you inner fire. Blessed be you crown of brightness. Blessed be you heart's desire. Blessed be you gods and mortals. Blessed be you inner fire. Blessed be you crown of brightness. Blessed be you heart's desire. Blessed be you gods and mortals. Blessed be you inner fire. Blessed be you crown of brightness. Blessed be you heart's desire.
Our opening song was Tipping Point by Sharon Knight and T. Thorne Coyle. Spring equinox is the one where the balance between day and night is tilting toward the day for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, and the days are getting longer. Earth-centered traditions celebrate the spring equinox as the holiday Ostara. Reverend Selena Fox of Circle Sanctuary in Wisconsin describes the holiday thusly. Quote, spring equinox, also known as Ostara, occurs in the middle of March. It marks the beginning of spring and the time when days and nights are of equal length. The goddess manifests as Ostara, or Istra, with her basket of eggs. She is accompanied by the hare or rabbit, a manifestation of the god. End quote. The Germanic goddess Istra is equated with the Sumerian goddess Ishtar and the Hebrew queen Esther. The Germanic hare is a manifestation of the trickster god, known as Tammuz in Sumerian myth, Elegba the wild boy in West African tales, and Br'er Rabbit in African American stories. The trickster gets his own holiday on April Fool's Day. The colors associated with the Ostara festival are yellow for the strengthening sun and the celebration of this holiday at dawn, and green because it represents the sprouting of new plant life. This is a festival of rebirth and reawakening from winter's slumber, the first official day of spring. And now I'm going to play a song of prayer to the goddess Istra by Worded Rite.
Istra, arise, come, lady, come. The earth is growing green again. Come, lady, come. Eostre, arise. Come, lady, come. The earth is growing green again. Come, lady, come. Eostre, arise. Come, lady, come. The earth is growing green again. Come, lady, come.
Follow along with me as I guide you in a meditation on Ostara, written by Reverend Fox. Find a comfortable, safe, and quiet place to be for this meditation. Close your eyes. Relax and center yourself by taking deep, slow, gentle breaths. Now, journey inward. Imagine that you are in a hilly countryside. It is just before dawn, at the beginning of springtime. The land is nearing the end of its winter slumber. You face the east and watch the sun as it begins to rise. Rays of light shimmer onto the land and into the sky. Experience the beautiful colors of light that is the dawn. Now, as the glowing disk of the sun becomes visible above the hills, see the goddess Ostara appear to you on the land in the distance, in the east. She is beginning to move towards you. As she moves, the land awakens with new life. You see her coming toward you in the form of a beautiful maiden. You see her radiant face and flowing gown. She is carrying a golden basket filled with colored eggs. Beside her is her companion, a frisky, magical rabbit. As they come closer to you, you see that with each step that they take, the land around them bursts into new life and grows green. New grasses sprout from the ground. Herbs flourish. Trees grow new leaves. You call out a welcome to them and to the spring they bring. As you meet face to face, you see that the goddess Ostara and the rabbit are both smiling a welcome to you. Ostara then holds her golden basket towards you and invites you to take one of the eggs in it as a gift from the spring. You notice that each egg has a different color. You see a beautiful array of choices. You feel more drawn to one of the eggs than the others and choose it. Now you hold the egg that you have selected in both of your hands. Focus on its color and reflect on what that color means to you. Ostara invites you to ask the sacred egg to give you a message about personal growth. You ask, and then are quiet as you pay attention to whatever words, symbols, sensations, impressions, or other forms of message emerge. Ostara now invites you to take the sacred egg and its power of new growth into yourself. You hold the egg to your heart, and as you do this, you absorb it into your being. You experience the renewal of springtime. You radiate vitality. Be immersed in this experience. Continuing to experience vitality within you, you prepare to end this meditative journey. You reflect once more on the color and the message of the sacred egg. You bid Ostara and her rabbit companion farewell for now, knowing that they continue to live within your consciousness to guide you in your springtime growth. When you feel ready, take several gentle, slow breaths to aid you in returning to waking consciousness. Then slowly arise, stretch, and orient to the here and now, as you carry with you the memory of your experiences on the journey you have just completed. Let the vitality of spring renewal continue to be with you as you go about your daily life.
To all living things, praise to the maiden and the joy that she brings. Praise to the earth that all the creatures now sing. Hope is renewed with the coming of spring. Return from darkness and the wise crone within. Return to the maiden and creation begin. It's a time for things growing, a time now for flowing, time now for sowing the seeds of your dream. So praise to the spring, praise to all living things, praise to the maiden and the joy that she brings. Praise to the earth, let all the creatures now sing. Hope is renewed with the coming of the spring. The heart fires are stirring with the new life returning. It's time now for learning what rebirth truly means. And we honor ourselves and all the fairies and elves. May we dance and ring bells for the coming of the spring. So praise to the spring, praise to all living things, praise to the maiden and the joy that she brings. Praise to the earth, let all the creatures now sing. Hope is renewed with the coming of the spring. So open your heart to nature's wondrous art. It's time now to start the healing of the green. Young rabbits abound, and there's flowers all around. The air is filled with the sound of the coming of the spring. So praise to the spring, praise to all living things, praise to the maiden and the joy that she brings. Praise to the earth that all the creatures now sing. Hope is renewed with the coming of the spring. Flowers all around, the air is filled with the sound of the coming of the spring. So praise to the spring, praise to all living things, praise to the maiden and the joy that she brings. Praise to the earth and all the creatures now sing. Hope is renewed with the coming of the spring.
That was Ostara by Lisa Thiel from her album, Circle of the Seasons. This holiday is an auspicious time for seasonal divination using carefully decorated eggs. Reverend Selena Fox describes how this is done at Circle Sanctuary's Welcome Spring Festival. Pick four things that you might choose to do this spring that have the potential for enriching your life. These things can be options that you have already considered doing. Write the four possible actions on a sheet of paper or in your journal. Choose a symbol or word to signify each action. Carefully mark it next to the four possible actions. Hold an unpeeled, hard-boiled egg in your hands for a few moments and silently focus on it being a spiritual helper on your life's journey. Silently thank the bird species that produced it. Acknowledge the egg as the synthesis of the elements of nature, the earth which is its physical form, the water inside, the spark of life within, the fire and air that hard-boiled it, and spirit, its connection with you as your spiritual helper. When you feel complete with the meditation, begin decorating the egg. On one end of the egg, make a circle, and inside put your name or initials, plus a symbol that represents the spring season to you. At the other end of the egg, make a circle, and put inside it a symbol or word that represents divinity to you, such as a deity name, or a sacred color, or a sacred shape. Now, draw four vertical lines, dividing the remainder of the egg into roughly four segments. In each of the four segments, put the symbol and or word of each of the new growth options that you are considering. When you are done decorating the egg, hold it for a few moments in your hands and imagine it glowing with spiritual light. Connect again with the egg as a spiritual helper in this decorated form. Journey outside and present yourself and your egg to each of the directions and focus on your connection with the divine within and within all of nature around you. Find a sloped area to serve as the place for rolling your egg. If necessary, clear a way for the rolling by removing sticks, leaves, and other debris. Once this is done, center yourself and hold the egg in your hands. Request guidance by repeatedly saying something along the lines of, "Guidance for new growth come." Roll the egg down the slope, keeping your eye on it as it rolls. Notice where it lands. Go to the egg after it stops rolling and then examine what side and symbol is facing the sky. Focus on the segment that is most predominantly facing upward. Call to mind what this symbol represents. Spend some time meditating on what it has shown itself to you. Reflect on yourself putting it into action in your daily life. When you are done, give thanks for the guidance received and take up your egg. What you do with the egg from here is up to you. For example, you can eat it as a sacred food, or you can take it home and place it on an altar or other special place, or you can bury it in the earth, or you can leave it at a sacred site as an offering. Whatever you choose, keep in mind that this is a sacred helper. Make a note about the guidance you received. Journal about your experiences. Manifest the action in your life and notice in what ways you grow as a result of doing this. Give thanks for this growth and change.
The dark, the the dark passageway, under the white cypress tree, fixed by the eyes of Persephone. I will go, I will follow you down to the river of forgetfulness.
That was Persephone by Magic Folk. At both equinoxes, our southern European ancestors told tales of the flower maiden Kori, how she was kidnapped by Hades, ruler of the underworld, and how her mother, the fertility goddess Demeter, grieved and caused the first winter. Eventually, Kori, the flower maiden, changed into Persephone, the queen of the underworld. As Kori, she was allowed to leave the underworld on the spring equinox, but Zeus, king of the gods, ruled that she had to return as Persephone each fall equinox because she had eaten 6 pomegranate seeds. Her story is about transformation and coming of age, and is recounted by Cynthia Jones in her essay, 6 Seeds, which is told from Kori/Persephone's point of view. That first winter, I did not eat. In my culture, to eat with another is to be forever bound. Food is a communion. You take in and become one with what you eat. Every meal is communion with my mother Demeter. It is communion with a whole community of gardeners and cooks, of elemental spirits and those who serve them. In my culture, the union and communion of a meal was also a promise, a contract. I didn't act quickly to seal my fate. I did not eat. My time with Hades was initiation into the mysteries, me into his and him into mine. And then the rain called. It called. It brought my memories of my mother to me. It brought the sweetness of the earth and life on the earth to my senses. I could smell grass. Do you remember how grass smells? And wind, and dawn, and rain. Oh, the smell of rain. In it, I could smell the promise of apples and roses and the sweet, sweet scents of summer. It was as if the rain opened the earth and I could smell light. I could feel color as it touched my skin. I was hungry. I had not eaten. I was hungry for Earth again, and I was hungry for the underworld. I was hungry for my husband Hades and the work I did here. I was hungry for the meadows and the flowers that followed me everywhere. Most of all, I was hungry to be all that I am, not just one aspect of myself. I wanted to be all that I am. I was hungry before the first spring, and I am hungry now. If I went back into life with no bonds to the underworld but my desire to return, my fate would be in the hands of my mother. If I stayed hidden in the underworld, I would be giving up my freedom. My destiny would belong to Hades. Either way, my life would be decided by others. It would be decided according to their desires, rather than my own. That is the fate of everyone who makes no contracts, who isn't willing to bite into their own life. That was not going to be my story. The contract that determined my life would be mine. Pomegranate. A seed filled with seeds. Blood red. Jewel red. The color of life. The color of integrity. The color of garnets and rubies, each seed filled with fire and water. I had a pomegranate. I would not choose either realm. I would choose both. 6 seeds. I ate 6 seeds. 6 months, I live beneath the surface. 6 months, I live above. I am daughter and I am queen. I am Kori the flower maiden and Persephone the death goddess. I satisfied my hunger with 6 seeds. Is your fate at the whim of the gods and goddesses? Is your life in the hands of Zeus, who said, I didn't think it would matter. After all, she was just a girl. Or do you know what you hunger for? And if you do, will you take a bite? What contracts will you make with life? I am now going to read a short poem by Iowa State University junior Taylor Sklenar, also entitled 6 Seeds. You break the pomegranate, like Persephone breaking fertile ground, popping blood-red bits absently into your mouth. As if you don't know, you make the seasons change.
The light, come on, Persephone, put up a fight, girl. taste so good with a needle and honey. When the sky unfolds, you wouldn't need any money. You could live up this like it's the end of the world. If you don't get up on your feet, we'll be here a week. It's gonna be the longest winter that you ever seen. And you can't take him out, and you can't take him down. Run your hometown. You're chanting psalms of the mystics deep within the tombs. Your body's drenched in incense, and as you breathe the fumes, you think maybe I can make myself at home here. But it seeps in Sweden, then it comes down heavy. By the time you come to that plane, rock, rock steady, and the buzz of the pinball machine in the other room. If you don't get up on your feet, we'll be here a week. It's gonna be the longest winter that you've ever seen. You can feel it in your bones. Well, you could never bring him home. You'll have to keep your secret in this catacomb. So keep this light burning bright for me. Oh, won't you keep this light burning bright?
Was Montreal singer-songwriter Alejandra Rivera performing Goodnight Persephone live. There are many, many stories in which a young maiden is in trouble from what may be described as an old witch or crone, while the maiden's mother is either absent, culpable, or helpless to intervene. Snow White, Rapunzel, Sleeping Beauty, and dozens more tales contain this dynamic. Why is this theme so common in our stories? Eminent Earth spirituality theologian Starhawk holds that fairy tales are a way that our ancestors passed down wisdom, and that as patriarchy became the dominant paradigm, the ancient pagan trinity of the maiden, mother, and crone changed in legend from being three faces of one overall great goddess to being separate archetypes in conflict with each other. The maiden longing for self-determination, the mother trying to get her wayward daughter to behave and move up in society, and the crone banished from society to the wilderness to plot her revenge. The net effect of this separation and conflict is to keep women from joining together to fight the patriarchy. Starhawk believes that, despite the stories being changed over time due to patriarchy, hints of older beliefs shine through. I'm going to read you a grim Grimm's fairy tale, and as you listen, see if you can identify some of the older themes under the surface of the 19th century patriarchal veneer. This is Jorinda and Joringel, translated by May Seller from Jacob and Wilhelm Grimm. Once upon a time, there was a castle in the middle of a deep forest where an old woman lived quite alone, for she was an enchantress. In the daytime, she transformed herself into a cat or an owl, but in the evening, she became an ordinary woman again. She was able to entice animals and birds to come to her castle, and then she would kill and cook them. If any youth found himself within 100 paces of the castle, he became rooted to the spot and could not stir until the woman set him free. If a pretty girl came inside the magic circle, the old enchantress changed her into a bird and locked her up in a wicker cage. She had 7,000 such cages in the castle, each containing a rare bird that had been a happy, carefree young girl. Now, there was once a young maiden called Jorinda, who was very beautiful, and she was betrothed to a youth named Joringel. And their greatest delight was to be together. On the evening of the autumn equinox, the two went for a walk in the forest. It was calm and peaceful under the trees, and the fading sunlight glinted in the dark green leaves. "How beautiful this place is," sighed Joringel. "But we must take care not to come too close to the witch's castle." They wandered on, hand in hand, and without knowing why, they began to feel sad and forlorn. In a nearby tree, a turtle dove sang its plaintive lament. They looked around quite confused, for they did not remember the way home. Jorinda began to weep and sob. Overcome by fear, Joringel tried to comfort her, but he too felt something ominous in the air around them. Half the sun was still above the mountain, and half had dropped behind it. When Joringel looked through the trees and he saw the old wall of the witch's castle near them, he was terrified. In the last rays of the setting sun, Jorinda sank to the ground and began to sing, "My little bird with throat so red sings sorrow, sorrow, sorrow. He sings to the little dove that is dead, sings sorrow, sorrow." Joringel looked at Jorinda. Right before his eyes, she had changed into a nightingale and was singing. An owl with glowing eyes threw 3 times around her and screeched 3 times. Joringel could not stir. He looked like a stone. He could not weep or speak or move, neither a hand nor a foot. Now the sun had disappeared. The owl flew into the bushes, and immediately an old, bent woman came out of it. She was yellow-skinned and thin, and had large red eyes and a hooked nose, which bent all the way down to her chin. She muttered to herself, caught the nightingale out of the air that had once been Jorinda, and carried it away in her hand. Joringel stood speechless and motionless, until at last the old woman returned and said in a gruff voice, "Good evening, young man. When the moon shines on the basket in my castle, you will be freed." Just then the moon broke through a cloud, and Joringel was free. He fell on his knees before the old woman and implored her to give him back his Jorinda. She said, "You'll never see Jorinda again." Humph, and then she went away. Joringel called after her. He wept, but all in vain. "What's to become of me?" he cried. After a while, he found a way out of the forest, and he came to a strange village. There he took employment as a shepherd, and stayed on herding the sheep for the winter. He often went back to the castle, but never too close. On Imbolc night, on February 1st, he dreamed that he had found a blood-red flower, in the center of which lay a beautiful pearl. In the dream, he plucked the flower, and in the castle, everything he touched with the flower was freed from the enchantment, and thus he rescued his lovely Jorinda. When Joringel awoke, he set out to find such a flower. He roamed through woods and valleys and crossed steep mountains in his search. For days, he did not give up hope. And 3 days before the spring equinox, early in the morning, he found it. In the center of the flower was a large dewdrop, as big as the most lovely pearl. He traveled 3 days and nights with the flower until he arrived at the castle just at dawn. This time, when he came within 100 paces, he was still able to move. And as he continued, he traveled 3 days and nights with the flower. until he arrived at the castle just at dawn. This time, when he came within 100 paces, he was still able to move, and he continued on until he reached the gate. Delighted at his success, he touched the great iron gate with the flower, and it sprang open. He entered, passed through the courtyard, and then paused to listen for the singing of the birds. At last, Joringel heard the melodious chirping and followed the sounds until he found himself in the great hall of the castle. And there was the old enchantress, with her thousands of birds in their wicker cages. When she saw Joringel, she went into a rage and she breathed out poison and gall at him. But she couldn't move a step towards him. Joringel took no notice of her, and he looked at the thousands of cages filled with birds. How was he going to find Jorinda among them? While he was considering, he noticed out of the corner of his eye the old witch picked up a cage and stealing towards the door. But he sprang after her and touched her and the cage with his flower, making her powerless to work enchantments against him. And the little nightingale stepped out of the wicker cage and became Jorinda, even more beautiful than before. Then Joringel walked all around the room, touching each cage with his magic flower. One by one, the birds were released and turned back into lovely maidens. When they were all free, Joringel went home with his Jorinda, and they lived a long and happy life. What older themes did you pick up in that tale? Off the bat, I noticed that the old woman enchantress is able to shapeshift into an owl and a cat. The owl, of course, is associated with wisdom, speaking to the experience and knowledge that an old woman would have accumulated. The cat, meanwhile, has long been associated with witches and magic. But more interesting than that, however, is archaeological finds including Neolithic carvings of women with bird heads from the Vinca culture of Southeast Europe and terracotta reliefs from the old Babylonian period of the Middle East, showing a winged goddess figure with eagle's feet flanked by owls and perched on top of lions. This is believed to depict the goddess Ishtar. The old woman enchantress is a direct link to the ancient bird goddesses who wielded great power and magic in their respective cultures. She doesn't even get a name in the fairy tale, she simply is powerful and magical. The young lovers, meanwhile, are affected differently by the magic circle around the enchantress's dwelling. This boundary is also invoked in modern paganism when we start our rituals by drawing a circle to create a spiritual container for the energy that we raise. The maiden Jorinda is turned into a bird and taken into the dwelling. This could be an initiation metaphor. The enchantress isn't imprisoning the maidens, she is training them and initiating them into the ancient wisdom shared only among women, making each of them a priestess of the primeval bird goddess. Because this tale is told through the lens of patriarchy, the details of that training are not included, but we can guess from the description of the enchantress at the beginning that includes hunting, forestry, and communion with animals as well as the ancient bird goddess. These activities align the maidens with one more goddess, the huntress Diana, maiden goddess of the moon. With their wilderness lore, the women become independent. They are able to attend to their own physical and spiritual needs, and this is probably the reason for the patriarchal depiction of their leader, the enchantress, as a villain. Meanwhile, the young man Joringel is not welcome in the bird women's training house, so he is sent away. He must follow a different initiatory journey. Bereft of his relationship to the goddess through the maiden Jorinda, and prohibited from the isolated training house in the wilderness, he returns to society, but not the one he came from. He must learn to contribute to that society by learning a trade, becoming a shepherd. Many ancient gods are aligned with shepherds, from Ishtar's mate Tammuz to the good shepherd Jesus. A dream tells him how to reconnect with his partner, Jorinda. So Joringel becomes a man with an independent identity and calling. But he's not just any man, he is a shaman, a member of society who communicates with the divine through visions. His initiatory journey complete, Joringel returns to the enchantress's training house in the woods, where he finds that he is no longer barred but able to cross the previously impenetrable barriers and face his final test, identifying his female counterpart among the overwhelming numbers of initiated bird priestesses. With a helpful hint from the enchantress, he succeeds. At the end of the story, the newly minted shaman and priestess return together to their original village and live happily ever after, each contributing equally to their society through the man's animal husbandry and the maiden's wildcraft, and each with different but equally valid spiritual practices and insights.
I had green grass, I had bare feet. To this day I'll tell you true, it was my purest love affair. But I craved nights and city streets myself right there. And now I don't know what I'm doing here. This city must be run by fear. But life back in the country sure would bore me to no end. Teach me how to get it back. I learned a lot, but still I lack the earth girl in my middle. She's my only.
That was Earth Girl by Celia from her album, Breathe. Now, I mentioned the young god as a trickster at the start of this program, and I'd like to return to that theme. According to the American folklore website of author S. E. Schlosser, quote, a trickster is a mischievous or roguish figure in myth or folklore who typically makes up for physical weakness with cunning and subversive humor. The trickster alternates between cleverness and stupidity, kindness and cruelty, deceiver and deceived, breaker of taboos, and creator of culture, end quote. I'm going to read Schlosser's retelling of the Georgia folktale Br'er Rabbit and the Tar Baby. Well, now, that rascal, Br'er Fox, hated Br'er Rabbit on account of he was always cutting capers and bossing everyone around. So Br'er Fox decided to capture and kill Br'er Rabbit if it was the last thing he ever did. He thought and he thought till he came up with a plan. He would make a tar baby. Br'er Fox went home and he got some tar and he mixed it with some turpentine and he sculpted it into the figure of a cute little baby. Then he stuck a hat on the tar baby and sat her in the middle of the road. Br'er Fox hid himself in the bushes near the road, and he waited and waited for Br'er Rabbit to come along. At long last, he heard someone whistling and chuckled to himself, and he knew that Br'er Rabbit was coming up that hill. As he reached the top, Br'er Rabbit spotted the cute little tar baby, and he was surprised. He stopped and stared at this strange creature. He had never seen anything like it before. "Good morning," said Br'er Rabbit, doffing his hat. "Nice weather we're having." The tar baby said nothing. Br'er Fox laid low and grinned an evil grin. Br'er Rabbit tried again. "And how are you feeling this fine day?" The tar baby, she said nothing. Br'er Fox grinned his evil grin and lay low in the bushes. Br'er Rabbit frowned. This strange creature was not very polite. It was beginning to make him mad. "Ahem," said Br'er Rabbit loudly, wondering if the tar baby were deaf. "I said, how are you this morning?" The tar baby said nothing. Br'er Fox curled up into a ball to hide his laughter. His plan was working perfectly. "Are you deaf or just rude?" demanded Br'er Rabbit, losing his temper. "I can't stand folks that are stuck up. You take off that hat and say howdy-do, or I'm going to give you such a lickin'." The tar baby just sat in the middle of the road, looking as cute as a button and saying nothing at all. Br'er Fox rolled over and over under the bushes, fit to burst because he didn't dare laugh out loud. "I'll learn ya," Br'er Rabbit yelled. He took a swing at the cute little tar baby, and his paw got stuck in the tar. "Let me go or I'll hit you again," shouted Br'er Rabbit. The tar baby, she said nothing. "Fine, be that way," said Br'er Rabbit, swinging at the tar baby with his free paw. Now both his paws were stuck in the tar, and Br'er Fox danced with glee behind the bushes. "I'm gonna kick the stuffin' out of you," Br'er Rabbit said, and he pounced on the tar baby with both feet. Both of those feet sank deeper into the tar baby. Br'er Rabbit was so furious he headbutted the cute little creature till he was completely covered with the tar and unable to move. At this, Br'er Fox leapt out of the bushes and he strolled over to Br'er Rabbit. "Well, well, what have we here?" he asked, grinning his evil grin. Br'er Rabbit gulped. He was stuck fast. He did some fast thinking while Br'er Fox rolled about on the road, laughing himself sick over Br'er Rabbit's dilemma. "I've got you this time, Br'er Rabbit," said Br'er Fox, jumping up and shaking off the dust. "You've sassed me for the very last time. Now, I wonder what I should do with you." Br'er Rabbit's eyes got very large. "Oh, please, Br'er Fox, whatever you do, please don't throw me in the briar patch. Maybe I should roast you over a fire and eat you," mused Br'er Fox. "No, that's too much trouble. Maybe I'll hang you instead." "Roast me, hang me, do whatever you please," said Br'er Rabbit. "Only please, Br'er Fox, please don't you throw me in the briar patch." "If I'm gonna hang you, I'll need some string," said Br'er Fox, "and I don't have any string handy. But the stream's not far away, so maybe I'll drown you instead." "Drown me, roast me, hang me, do whatever you please," said Br'er Rabbit. "Only please, Br'er Fox, please don't throw me into the briar patch." "The briar patch, eh?" said Br'er Fox. "What a wonderful idea. You'll be torn into little pieces." So grabbing up the tar-covered rabbit, Br'er Fox swung him around and around and around and then flung him head over heels into the briar patch. Br'er Rabbit let out such a scream as he fell that all of Br'er Fox's fur stood straight up off his body. Br'er Rabbit fell screaming into the briar bushes with a crash and a mighty thump, and then there was silence. Br'er Fox cocked one ear towards the briar patch, listening for whimpers of pain, but he heard nothing. Br'er Fox cocked the other ear toward the briar patch, listening for Br'er Rabbit's death rattle, but he heard nothing. Then Br'er Fox heard someone calling his name. He turned around and looked up the hill, and there was Br'er Rabbit sitting on a log, combing the tar out of his fur with a wood chip and looking mighty smug. "I was bred and born in that briar patch, Br'er Fox," he called. "Born and bred in that briar patch." And Br'er Rabbit skipped away as merry as a cricket, while Br'er Fox ground his teeth in rage and went home. The end. Tricksters like Loki, Anansi, Raven, Coyote, and even Br'er Rabbit serve to show that brains are often more important than brawn, and they remind their victims, I mean opponents, to stay humble, or else. Now here is a story song about another trickster rabbit, entitled Rabbit Story, by S.J. Tucker, from her album, Blessings.
Trickster came a-calling to find a totem here, to teach the foolish heart of man without installing fear. Many came and many went, but still the trickster paused. Bear and cat and tiger tried, but had too many claws. Dog and wolf, the wise indeed, had teeth, 'twere quite a fright. And owl with his tawny eyes could only see at night. know, the trickster said at last, teachers, I see many, but my way is full of laughter, and in you I see not any. But beneath the tree where eagle sat, coyote told the tale of silly hares cavorting in the old country of Wales. Raven stared unto the sun, and crow sang awful songs, and a rabbit sat a-listening with ears so wondrous long. Aha! The trickster danced a dance of joy and victory sweet. He laughed a laugh and swooped a swoop and landed at their feet. Of all here now, the trickster said, you are the very beasts. But a rabbit said, I'm sorry, sir, but of all we are the least. The trickster smiled and raised a hand and spoke, I have a plan. The four of you shall help me to teach the heart of man. Raven, with your love of light, the sun you'll steal and soon. For the gift of warmth I give to man to be the greatest boon. And crow, you stilly creature who sings without a voice, teach man of pride and helping, you really have no choice. Coyote, my friend, together we'll spin many a tale at night, and teach man by our naughtiness what really should be right. At last he turned to rabbit with a twinkle in his eye. You'll be my favorite creature, and here's the reason why. Your eyes are bright, your feet are swift, your ears hear round the bend, and your very simple humbleness will steal the heart of men. Together we shall thwart the pains the gods do throw to earth, and turn aside their fiery darts with merriment and mirth. And when time comes that men forget the lessons animals render, 'twill be the humble rabbit that mankind will remember. And round the trickster the animals throng, the birds and all the beasts, and humbly bow to the king they found, who thought himself the least.
I will bid you merry part, my dear listeners, with this prayer for Ostara by Wiccan author Scott Cunningham. O great goddess, you have freed yourself from the icy prison of winter. Now is the greening, when the fragrance of flowers drifts on the breeze. Now is the beginning. Life renews itself by your magic, earth goddess. The god stretches and rises, eager in his youth and bursting with the promise of summer. So mote it be until we merry meet again.
Thank you for the earth so sweet. Thank you.
If you've just tuned in to this original programming from the heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio, this is a program featuring a patchwork quilt of artists, public speakers, and individuals of note in Central Iowa. Today, we featured music and stories from Elizabeth Rarrett, facilitator of Persephone's Daughters, an earth spirituality group based in Ames. I hope you've enjoyed this original programming here at KHOI. If you would like more information about this or other programs, visit our website at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. If you enjoyed this show, friend us on Facebook. Heart of Iowa is a radio production training workshop, as well as a radio show. If you would like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. Your participation as an audience and your generous donations help make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.